Chapter 23. To lose the sun. Trying to hold the unfamiliar woolen cloak tightly around her with one hand, trying not to fall out of the even more unfamiliar saddle, Shallan awkwardly heeled her horse forward and followed Harina and her swordmaster Moad through the hole in the air that led from a stable yard in the Sun Palace to... She was not sure where, except that it was a long open area. A clearing, was it called? She thought that was right. A clearing larger than a raker's deck, among stunted trees spaced out on hills. The pines, the only trees among them she recognized, were too small and twisted for any use but tar and turpentine. Most of the rest showed bare gray branches that made her think of bones. The morning sun sat just above the treetops, and if anything, the cold seemed more bitter here than it had in the city she had left behind. She hoped the horse did not misstep and tumble her down onto the rocks that stuck up wherever patches of snow did not cover the rotting leaves on the ground. She distrusted horses. Unlike ships, animals had minds of their own. They were treacherous things to climb on top of. And horses had teeth. Whenever her mount showed his, so near to her legs, she flinched and patted his neck and made soothing sounds. At least she hoped the beast found them soothing. Catswain herself, garbed in unrelieved dark green, sat easily on a tall horse with a black mane and tail, maintaining the weave that made the gateway. Horses did not bother her. Nothing bothered her. A sudden breeze stirred the dark gray cloak spread over the back end of her mount, but she gave no sign of feeling the cold at all. The golden hair ornaments dangling around her dark gray buns swung as she turned her head to watch Shallan and her companions. She was a handsome woman, but not one you would notice twice in a crowd, except that her smooth face did not match her hair. Once you came to know her, it was too late. Shallan would have given much to see how that weave was done, even if it had meant being near Cadswain, but she had not been allowed into the stable yard until the gateway was complete, and seeing a sail spread on the yardarm did not teach you how to set a sail, much less make one. All she knew was the name. Riding past, she avoided meeting the Aes Sedai's gaze, but she felt it. The woman's eyes made her toes curl, seeking a footing the stirrups could not give. She could see no way to escape, yet she hoped to find one through studying the Aes Sedai. That she knew very little about Aes Sedai, she was readily willing to admit. She had never met one before sailing to Cairhien, and thought about them only to praise the light that she had not been chosen to become one. But there were currents among Cadswain's companions, deep beneath the surface. Deep, strong currents could alter everything that seemed apparent on the surface. The four Aes Sedai who had come through right after Cadswain were waiting on their horses at one side of the clearing, with three warders. At least Shallan was sure that Ivone was the fiery Alana's warder, and Tomas was stout little Varen's. But she also was sure she had seen the very young man who stayed so close to plump Daigyan's side wearing an Ashaman's black coat. Surely he could not be a warder. Could he? Eben was just a boy. Yet when the woman gazed at him, her usual puffed-up pride seemed to swell further. Kumira, a pleasant-looking woman with blue eyes that could turn into knives when something interested her, sat her saddle a little to one side, studying young Eben so sharply it was a wonder he was not lying on the ground flensed.
"I will not put up with this much longer," Harina grumbled, thumping her mare with her bare heels to keep it moving.
Her brocaded yellow silks did not help her keep a good seat in the saddle any more than did Shallan's blue. She swayed and slid with the animal's movements, on the point of toppling to the ground at every step. The breeze gusted again, flipping the dangling ends of her sash about, making her cloak billow, but she disdained to control the garment. Cloaks were not much used in the ships. They got in the way and could tangle your arms and legs when you needed them for survival. Moad had refused one, trusting to the quilted blue coat he wore in the coldest seas. Nasuna Bihara, all in bronze wool, rode through the gateway looking around as if trying to see everything at once, and then Elsa Penfell, who wore a sullen expression for some reason and clutched her fur-lined green cloak tight. None of the other Aes Sedai seemed to bother much with sheltering themselves from the cold.
"I may be able to see the Koromor," she says.
Harina muttered, pulling at her reins until the mare turned toward the side of the clearing away from where the Aes Sedai were gathering.
May! And she offers this chance as though granting a privilege.
Harina did not need to give a name. When Harina said she that way, like a jellyfish's sting, there could only be one woman she meant.
I have the right, bargained for and agreed. She denies me the agreed entourage. I must leave my sailmistress behind and my attendants.
Arian Borealis appeared through the opening, as intent as if she expected to find a battle, followed by Beldine Nyram, who did not even look like an Aes Sedai. Both wore green, Arian completely, Beldine in slashes in her sleeves and skirts. Did that mean something? Likely not.
Am I to approach the Coromor like a deck girl touching my heart to a sailmistress?
When several Aes Sedai were together, you could see the smooth-faced agelessness clearly, so you could not say whether any one was 20 or twice that, even if her hair was white. And Beldine simply looked a girl of 20, and that told no more than did her skirts.
Am I to air my own bedding and wash my own linens? She turns protocol straight into the wind. I will not allow it. No more!
These were old complaints, voiced a dozen times since last night, when Cadswain laid down her conditions if they were to accompany her. Those conditions had been strict, but Harina had had no choice save to accede, which only added to the bitterness. Shallan listened with half an ear, nodding and murmuring the appropriate responses. Agreement, of course. Her sister expected agreement. Most of her attention was on the Aes Sedai, surreptitiously. Moad did not pretend to listen, but then he was Harina's swordmaster. Harina might be tight as a wet knot with everyone else, yet she gave Moad so much leeway anyone might have thought the hard-eyed, gray-haired man was her lover, especially since both were widowed. At least they might think it if they did not know Harina. Harina would never take a lover who stood lower than she, and now, of course, that meant she could take none. In any case, once they stopped their horses near the trees, Moad leaned an elbow on the tall pommel of his saddle, rested a hand on the long carved ivory hilt of the sword thrust behind his green sash, and openly studied the Aes Sedai and the men with them. Where had he learned to ride a horse? He actually looked comfortable. Anyone could tell his rank at a glance, from his 8 earrings of the heaviest weight and the knotting of his sash, even if he was not wearing his sword and matching dagger. Did Aes Sedai have no way to do the same? Could they truly be so disorganized? Supposedly the White Tower was like some mechanical contrivance that ground up thrones and reshaped them to its will. Of course, the machinery did seem to be broken now.
I said, where has she brought us, Shallan?
Harina's voice, like an icy razor, drained the blood from Shallan's face. Serving under a younger sibling was always difficult, but Harina made it more so. In private, she was beyond cool, and in public, she was capable of having a sailmistress hung up by the ankles, not to mention a windfinder. And since that young, shore-bound woman Min had told her she would be mistress of the ships one day, she had grown ever sharper. Staring hard-eyed at Shallan, she raised her golden scent box as if to cover an unpleasant odor, though the cold killed all the perfume. Hurriedly, Shallan looked into the sky, trying to judge the sun. She wished her sextant were not locked away on white spray. The shorebound were never allowed to see a sextant, much less see one being used, but she was uncertain it would have done her any good. These trees might be short, but she still could not make out a horizon. Close on to the north, the hills rose into mountains that slanted northeast to southwest. She could not say how high she was. There was far too much up and down about landside to suit her. Even so, any windfinder knew how to make rough approximations, and when Harina demanded information, she expected to receive it. "I can only guess, Wave Mistress," she said. Harina's jaw tightened, but no windfinder would present a guess as a firm position. "I believe we are 300 or 400 leagues south of Kyrian. More I cannot say." Any first-day apprentice using a string stick who gave a fix that loose would have been bent over for the deckmaster's starter, but the words chilled Shallan's tongue as she heard what she was saying. 100 leagues over the full turn of a day was good sailing for a raker. Moad pursed his lips thoughtfully. Harina nodded slowly, looking right through Shallon as though she could see rakers under full sail gliding through holes woven in the air with the power. The seas truly would be theirs, then. Giving herself a shake, she leaned toward Shallon, her eyes catching Shallon's like hooks. "You must learn this, whatever the cost. Tell her you will spy on me if she teaches you. If you convince her, she might, the light willing. Or at least you may get close enough to one of the others to learn it." Shallon licked her lips. She hoped Harina had not seen her jerk. "I refused her before, Wave Mistress." She had needed some explanation of why the Aes Sedai had held her for a week, and a version of the truth had seemed safest. Harina knew everything. Except the secret Varen had winkled out. Except that Shallon had agreed to Cadswain's demands in order to hide that secret. The grace of the light be upon her, she regretted Aileel. But she had been so lonely that she sailed too far before she knew it. With Harina, there were no evening talks over honeyed wine to soften the long months parted from her husband, Mishael. At best, many more months would pass before she could lie in his arms. "With respect, why should she believe me now?" "Because you want the learning." Harina chopped the air with one hand. "The shorebound always believe greed. You will have to tell some things, of course, to prove yourself. I will decide what each day. Perhaps I can steer her where I wish." Hard fingers seemed to dig into Shallon's scalp. She had intended to tell Cadswain as little as she could get by with, and as seldom, until she found a way free of her. If she had to talk with the Aes Sedai every day, and worse, lie to her outright, the woman would pry out more than Shallon wanted, more than Harina wanted, much more. It was as certain as sunrise. "Forgive me, Wave Mistress," she said, with every ounce of deference she could find. "But if I may be allowed to say so..." She cut off as Serene Nemdal rode up and reined to a halt before them. The last of the Aes Sedai and warders had come through, and Cadswain had let the gateway vanish. Coriel, a thin woman, if pretty, was laughing and tossing her mane of black hair as she spoke to Kumira. Maurice, a tall woman with eyes bluer than Kumira's and a more than handsome face that was stern enough to give even Harina pause, was using sharp gestures to direct the four men leading pack horses. Everyone else was gathering reins. It seemed they were all getting ready to leave the clearing. Serene was lovely, though the absence of jewelry lessened her looks, of course, as did the plain white dress she wore. The shorebound seemed to have no joy of color at all. Even her dark cloak was lined with white fur. "Cadswain, she has instructed me to be your attendant, Wave Mistress," she said, inclining her head respectfully. "I will answer your questions to the extent that I can, and help you with the customs as well as I know them. I realize you might feel discomfort at being with me, but when Cadswain commands, we must obey." Shallon smiled. She doubted the Aes Sedai knew that in the ships an attendant was what the shorebound would call a servant. Harina would probably laugh and demand to know whether the Aes Sedai could clean linens properly. It would be good to have her in a good mood. Rather than laughing, though, Harina stiffened in her saddle as though her backbone had become a mainmast, and her eyes popped. "I feel no discomfort," she snapped. "I simply prefer to put any questions to someone else, to Cadswain." "Yes, to Cadswain. And I certainly do not have to obey her or anyone. Not anyone, except the mistress of the ships." Shallon frowned. It was unlike her sister to sound scatter-witted. Drawing a deep breath, Harina continued in a firmer tone, though in a way just as oddly as before. "I speak for the mistress of the ships to the Atha'an Mier, and I demand due respect. I demand it. Do you hear me? Do you?" "I can ask her to name someone else," Serene said doubtfully, as if she did not expect her asking would change anything. "You must understand that she gave me quite specific instructions that day. But I should not have lost my temper. That is a failing of mine. Temper destroys logic." "I understand obeying orders," Harina growled, crouching in the saddle. She looked ready to launch herself at Serene's throat. "I approve of obeying orders," she very nearly snarled. "However, orders that have been carried out can be forgotten. They no longer need be spoken of.
Do you understand me?"
Shallon stared sideways at her. What was she talking about? What orders had Serene carried out? And why did Harina want them forgotten? Moad made no pretense of hiding his raised eyebrows. Harina was aware of his scrutiny, at least, and her face became a thunderhead. Serene seemed not to notice. "I do not see how one can deliberately forget," she said slowly, a small frown creasing her forehead. "But I suppose you mean that we should pretend to. Is that it?" The beaded braids dangling from her cowl clicked together as she shook her head at this foolishness. "Very well. I will answer your questions as well as I can. What do you wish to know?" Harina sighed loudly. Shallon might have taken it for impatience, but she thought it was relief. "Relief?" Relieved or not, Harina became her normal self again, self-possessed and commanding, meeting the Aes Sedai's gaze as though trying to make her drop her eyes. "You can tell me where we are and where we are going," she demanded. "We are in the hills of Kintara," Cadswain said, appearing before them suddenly, her mount rearing and pawing the air, flinging snow. "And we are going to Far Madding." Not only did she stay in the saddle, she did not even seem to notice the animals heaving. "Is the Koromor in this Far Madding?" "Patience is a virtue, I am told, Wave Mistress." Despite Cadswain's use of Harina's proper title, there was no respect in her manner. Far from it. "You will ride with me. Keep up and try not to fall off. It would be unpleasant if I had to have you carried like sacks of grain. Once we reach the city, keep silent unless I tell you to speak. I won't have you creating problems through ignorance. You will let Serene guide you. She has her instructions." Shallon expected an outburst of rage, but Harina held her tongue, though with obvious effort. Once Cadswain turned away, Harina did mutter angrily under her breath, but she clamped her teeth tight when Serene's horse moved. Plainly, her mutters were not to be overheard by Aes Sedai. Riding with Cadswain, it turned out, meant riding behind her, southward through the trees. Alana and Varin actually rode beside the woman, but one look from her when Harina attempted to join them made clear that no one else was welcome. Once again, the expected explosion did not come. Instead, Harina frowned at Serene for some reason, then jerked her mount around to take position between Shallon and Moad. She did not bother asking any further questions of Serene, on Shallon's other side, only glowered at the backs of the women ahead. If Shallon had not known Harina better, she would have said there was more sulk than anger in that glare. For her part, Shallon was glad to ride in silence. Riding a horse was difficult enough without having to talk at the same time. Besides, she suddenly knew why Harina was behaving in such a peculiar fashion. Harina must be trying to smooth the waters with the Aes Sedai. It had to be that. Harina never controlled her temper without great need. The strain of controlling it now must have her boiling inside. And if her efforts did not end as she wanted, she would boil Shallon. Thinking about that made Shallon's head ache. The light help and guide her, there had to be a way to avoid spying on her sister without finding her cheek chain stripped of honors and herself assigned to a scow under a sailmistress, brooding over why she had never risen higher and ready to take out her grievances on everyone around her. Equally as bad, Mishael might declare their marriage vows broken. There just had to be a way. Sometimes she twisted around in her saddle to look at the Aes Sedai riding behind her. There was nothing to learn from the woman in front, certainly. Every so often, Cadswain and Varin exchanged words, but leaning close to one another and speaking too softly to be overheard. Alana appeared intent on whatever lay ahead, her eyes always looking south. Two or three times she quickened her horse's pace for a few steps before Cadswain brought her back with a quiet word that Alana obeyed reluctantly, with hot-eyed stare or sullen grimace. Cadswain and Varin appeared solicitous of the woman, Cadswain patting her arm in almost the way Shallon patted her mount's neck, and Varin beaming at her as though Alana were recovering from an illness, which told Shallon nothing. So she thought about the others. "You did not rise in the ships just through your ability to weave the winds or predict the weather or fix a position. You needed to read the intent that lay between the words of your orders, to interpret small gestures and facial expressions, You had to notice who deferred to whom, even subtly, for courage and ability alone took you only so high. Four of them, Nasuna and Arion, Beldine and Elza, rode in a cluster not far behind her, though they were not really together, only occupying the same space. They did not talk among themselves or look at one another. They did not seem to like one another very much. In her mind, Shallan had them in the same boat with Serene. The Aes Sedai pretended that they were all one under Cadswain, yet that was plainly untrue. Maurice, Coriel, Kumira, and Daigyan crewed another boat, commanded by Cadswain. Sometimes Alana seemed in one boat, sometimes the other, while Varen appeared to be in some way of Cadswain's boat, but not in it. Swimming alongside, perhaps, with Cadswain holding her hand. If that was not strange enough, there was the matter of deference. Oddly, it seemed that Aes Sedai valued strength in the power above experience or skill. They ranked themselves by strength, like deckmen squabbling in shoreside taverns. All deferred to Cadswain, of course, yet there were oddities among the rest. By their own hierarchy, some in Nasuna's boat were in a position to expect deference from some in Cadswain's, but although those in Cadswain's boat who should defer did so, they did so as though to a superior who had committed a grievous crime known to all. By that hierarchy, Nasuna stood higher than any save Cadswain and Maurice, yet she faced Daigyan, who stood at the very bottom, as if willfully defiant over committing that crime, and so did the others in her boat. It was all very discreet, a slightly lifted chin, a small arch of the eyebrows, a twist of the lips, but obvious to an eye trained climbing in the ships. Perhaps there was nothing in it that would help her, but if she had to pick oakum, the only way was to find a thread and pull. The wind began to pick up. Gusts flattened her cloak against her back and made it flap on either side ahead of her. She was hardly aware of it. The warders might be another thread. They were all at the very rear, hidden by the Aes Sedai riding behind Nasuna and the other three. In truth, Shallan had expected that among 12 Aes Sedai there would be more than 7 warders. Every Aes Sedai was supposed to have one, if not more. She shook her head irritably, except the red Aja, of course. She was not entirely ignorant of Aes Sedai. Anyway, the question was not how many warders, but whether they all were warders. She was certain she had seen grizzled old Dahmer and the so pretty Jahar in black coats, too, before they suddenly took up with the Aes Sedai. At the time, she had been unwilling to look too closely at the black coats, and in truth, she had been half blind with the dainty Aileel as well, but she was sure. And whatever the case with Eben, she was almost certain the other two were warders now. Almost. Jahar jumped as fast as Nethan or Basana when Maurice pointed, and from the way Coriel smiled at Dahmer, he was either her warder or her bedwarmer. And Shallan could not imagine a woman like Coriel taking a nearly bald old man with a limp into her bed. She might know little about Aes Sedai, but she was sure bonding men who could channel was not an accepted practice. If she could prove they had done so, perhaps that was a knife sharp enough to cut herself free from Cadswain. "The men, they can no longer channel now," Serene murmured. Shallan straightened herself around in the saddle so quickly that she had to grab her horse's mane with both hands to keep from falling off. The wind blew her cloak over her head, and she had to fight that down before she could sit up. They were coming out of the trees above a wide road that curved southward out of the hills to a lake, perhaps a mile off, on the edge of flat land covered with brown grass, a sea of brown stretching to the horizon. The lake, bordered along the west with a narrow wash of reeds, was a pitiful excuse for a body of water, no more than 10 miles long at most, and less than that wide. A fair-sized island crouched in the middle, surrounded by high, tower-studded walls as far as she could see, and covered by a city. She took all that in at a glance, her eyes fastening on Serene. It was almost as if the woman had been reading her mind. "Why can they not channel?" she asked. Have you gentled them?" She thought that was the right word, but that was supposed to kill the man. She had always supposed it was just an odd way to soften execution for some unknown reason. Serene blinked, and Shallan realized the Aes Sedai had been speaking to herself. For a moment she studied Shallan as they followed Cadswain down the slope, then turned her gaze back to the city on the island. "You notice things, Shallan. It would be best if you keep what you have noticed about the men to yourself." "Such as them being warders?" Shallan said quietly. "Is that why you could hope to bond them? Because you gentled them?" She hoped to jar some admission loose, but the Aes Sedai merely glanced at her. She did not speak again until they had reached the bottom of the hill and turned onto the road behind Cadswain. The road was wide, the dirt packed hard by much traffic, but they had it to themselves. "It is not exactly a secret," Serene said at last, and not very willingly for something that was not a secret. "But neither is it well known. We do not speak of Far Madding often, except for sisters born there, and even they seldom visit. Still, you should know before you enter. The city possesses a Tarangreal, or perhaps it is three Tarangreal. No one knows. They, or it, cannot be studied any more than they can be removed. They must have been made during the breaking, when fear of madmen channeling the power was the matter of every day. But to pay such a price for the safety." The beaded braids dangling onto her chest rattled together as she shook her head in disbelief. "These Tarangreal, they duplicate a steading, in the important ways at least, I fear, though I suppose an Ogier would not think so." She gave a doleful sigh. Shallan gaped at her and exchanged confused looks with Harina and Moad. Why would fables frighten an Aes Sedai? Harina opened her mouth, then motioned for Shallan to ask the obvious question. Perhaps she was to make friends with Serene to help smooth her course, too? Shallan's head really did ache, but she was curious, too. "What ways are those?" she asked carefully. Did the woman really believe in people five spans tall who sang to trees? There was something about axes, too. "Here come the Aelfin to steal all your bread. Here come the Ogier to chop off your head." Light she had not heard that since Harina was still in leading strings. With their mother rising in the ships, she had been charged with raising Harina along with her own first child. Serene's eyes widened in surprise. "You truly do not know?" Her gaze went back to the island city ahead. By her expression, she was about to enter the bilges. "Inside the steading, you cannot channel. You cannot even feel the true source. No weave made outside can affect what is inside, not that that matters. In truth, here there are two steading, one within the other. The larger affects men, but we will enter the smaller before we reach the bridge." "You will not be able to channel in there?" Harina said. When the Aes Sedai nodded without looking away from the city, a thin, frosty smile touched Harina's lips. "Perhaps after we find quarters, you and I can discuss instructions." "You read the philosophy?" Serene looked startled. "The theory of instructions, it is not well thought of these days, yet I have always believed there was much to learn there. A discussion will be pleasant, to take my mind from other matters, if Cadswain allows us time." Harina's mouth fell open. Gaping at the Aes Sedai, she forgot to cling to her saddle, and only Moad seizing her arm saved her from a fall. Shallan had never heard Harina mention philosophy, but she did not care what her sister was talking about. Staring toward Far Madding, she swallowed hard. She had learned to sheathe someone against using the power, of course, and been sheathed herself as part of her training. Yet when you were sheathed, you could still feel the source. What would it be like not to feel it? Like the sun just out of sight beyond the corner of your eye? What would it be like to lose the sun? As they rode nearer the lake, she felt more aware of the source than she had since her first joy at touching it. It was all she could do not to drink of it, but the Aes Sedai would see the light and know, and likely know why. She would not shame herself or Harina in that manner. Small, beamy craft dotted the water, none more than six or seven spans in length, some hauling in nets, others creeping along on long sweeps. Judging by the wind-swept swells that rolled across the surface, sometimes crashing into one another in fountains of foam-like surf, sails might have been as much hindrance as help. Still, the boat seemed almost a familiar thing, though nothing like the sleek fours or eights or twelves carried on the ships. A tiny comfort amid strangeness. The road turned onto a spit of land jutting half a mile or more into the lake, and abruptly the source vanished. Serene sighed, but gave no other sign she had noticed. Shallon wet her lips. It was not so bad as she had feared. It made her feel empty, but she could bear that, as long as she did not have to bear it too long. The wind, gusting and curling and trying to steal cloaks, suddenly felt much colder. At the end of the spit, a village of grey stone houses with darker slate roofs stood between road and water on one side. Village women hurrying along with large baskets stopped at the sight of the mounted party. More than one felt at her own nose as she stared. Shallon had grown almost accustomed to those stares in Cairhien. In any case, the fortification opposite the village drew her eyes, a mound of tight-fitted stone 5 spans high, with soldiers watching through the barred face-guards of their helmets from atop towers at the corners. Some held drawn crossbows where she could see them. From a large iron-plated door at the end nearest the bridge, more helmeted soldiers spilled out into the road. Men in square-scaled armor with a golden sword worked on the left shoulder. Some wore swords at their waists, and others carried long spears or crossbows. Shallon wondered whether they expected the Aes Sedai to try fighting past. An officer with a yellow plume on his helmet motioned Cadswain to a halt, then approached her and removed his helmet, freeing gray-streaked hair that spilled down his back to his waist. He had a hard, disgruntled face. Cadswain leaned low in her saddle to exchange a few quiet words with the man, then produced a fat purse from beneath her saddlebags. He took it and stepped back, motioning one of the soldiers forward, a tall, bony man who was not wearing a helmet. He carried a writing board, and his hair, gathered at the back of his head like the officer's, also hung to his waist. He bent his neck respectfully before inquiring Alana's name, and wrote it very carefully, with his tongue caught between his teeth, dipping his pen often. Helmet on his hip, the discontented officer stood studying the others behind Cadswain with no expression. The purse hung from his hand as though forgotten. He seemed unaware he had been speaking with an Aes Sedai. Or maybe he did not care. Here an Aes Sedai was no different from any other woman. Shallon shuddered. Here she was no different from any other woman, bereft of her gifts for the duration of her stay. Bereft. "They take the names of all foreigners," Serene said. "The councils, they like to know who is in the city."
"Perhaps they would admit a wave mistress without bribes," Harina said dryly. The bony soldier, turning away from Alana, gave the usual shore-bound start at Shallon and Harina's jewelry before coming toward them. "Your name, mistress, if it pleases you," he said politely to Serene, ducking his head again. She gave it without mentioning that she was Aes Sedai. Shallon gave hers as simply, but Harina offered the titles as well. "Harina din Togara Two Winds, wave mistress of Clan Shodine, ambassador extraordinary of the mistress of the ships to the Atha'an Mier." The fellow blinked, then bit his tongue and bent his neck over the writing board. Harina scowled. When she wanted to impress someone, she expected them to be impressed. As the bony man was writing, a stocky, helmeted soldier with a leather scrip hanging from his shoulder pushed between Harina's horse and Moad's. Behind the bars of his face guard, a puckered scar down his face pulled up one side of his mouth in a sneer, but he bowed his head to Harina respectfully enough. And then he tried to take Moad's sword.
"You must allow it, or leave your blades here until you depart," Serene said quickly, when the swordmaster twitched the scabbard out of the stocky man's hands. "This service, it is what Cadswain was paying for, wave mistress. In Far Madding, no man is allowed to carry more than the belt knife unless it is peace-bonded so it cannot be drawn. Even the wall guards, like these men, cannot take a sword away from their place of duty." "Is that not so?" she asked the skinny soldier, and he replied that it was, and a good thing, too. With a shrug, Moad lifted the sword from his sash, and when the fellow with the perpetual sneer demanded his ivory-hilted dagger as well, he handed that over. Tucking the long dagger behind his belt, the man produced a spool of fine wire from his scrip and deftly began wrapping the sword in a fine net. Every so often he paused to pluck a seal press from his belt and fold a small lead disc around the wires, but he had quick, practiced hands.
The list of names, it will be distributed to the other two bridges, Serene went on, and the men will have to show the wires unbroken or they will be held until a magistrate determines that no other crime has been committed. Even if none has, the penalty is both a very heavy fine and flogging. Most foreigners, they deposit their weapons before entering to save the coin, but that would mean we must leave by this bridge. The light alone knows which direction we will want to go when we leave here. Looking toward Cadswain, who appeared to be restraining Alana from riding across the long bridge alone, Serene added almost under her breath, "At least I hope that is her reasoning." Harina snorted. "This is ridiculous. How is he to defend himself?"
"No need for any man to defend himself in Farmadding, mistress."
The stocky man's voice was coarse, but he did not sound mocking. He was stating the obvious.
"The street guards take care of that. Let any man as once start carrying a sword, and soon we'd be as bad as every place else. I heard what they're like, mistress, and we don't want that here."
Bowing to Harina, he strode on down the column, followed by the man with the writing board. Moad briefly examined his sword and dagger, both neatly wrapped, hilt and scabbard, then eased them back in place, taking care not to snag his sash on the seals.
"Swords only become useful when wits fail," he said.
Harina snorted again. Shallon wondered how that fellow had gained his scar if Farmadding was so safe. Sounds of protest rose from the rear where the other men were, but they were quickly silenced. By Maurice, Shallon would have wagered. At times, the woman made Cadswain seem lax. Her warders were like the trained guard dogs the Amayar used, ready to leap at a whistle, and she was not at all hesitant about calling down the other Aes Sedai's warders. Soon enough, all of the swords had been peace-bonded, and the pack horses searched for hidden weapons, and they rode out onto the bridge, hooves ringing on stone. Shallon tried to take in everything, not so much from interest as to take her mind off what was missing. The bridge was flat and as wide as the road behind, with low stone copings on the side that would stop a wagon from plunging over but give no shelter to attackers. And it was long, too, perhaps as much as 3/4 of a mile, and straight as an arrow. Now and then one of the boats passed beneath, which they could not have done had they had masts. Tall towers flanked the city's iron-strapped gates. The Camelin Gate was the name Serene gave, where guards with the golden sword on their shoulders bowed their heads to the women and cast suspicious eyes on the men. The street beyond... Trying to be observant was no use. The street was wide and straight, full of people and carts lined with stone buildings 2 or 3 stories high, and it all seemed a blur. The source was gone. She knew it would come back when she left this place, and light, she wanted to leave now. But how long before she could? The Coromore might be in this city, and Harina meant to make herself fast to the Coromore, perhaps because of who he was, perhaps because she thought he would help her rise to Mistress of the Ships. Until Harina left, until Cadswain freed them from the agreement, Shallon was anchored here. Here, where there was no true source. Serene talked incessantly, yet Shallon barely heard her. They crossed a large square with a huge statue of a woman in the center, but Shallon caught only her name, Ainion Avarhin, though she knew Serene was telling her why the woman was famous in Farmadding and why her statue was pointing toward the Camelin Gate. A row of leafless trees divided the street beyond the square. Sedan chairs and coaches and men in square-scaled armor threaded through the crowds, but they registered only on her eyes. Trembling, she huddled in on herself. The city vanished. Time vanished. Everything vanished except her fear that she would never feel the source again. She had never before realized what comfort she had taken in its unseen presence. It had always been there, promising joy beyond knowing, life so rich that colors paled when the power was gone from her. And now the source itself was gone. Gone. That was all she was aware of, all she could be aware of. It was gone.